It did prove the Spartans were willing to fight for freedom of the Greeks. They had backed this entire revolt, and it led immediately to war between Persia and Sparta over the Ionian cities. The second important point is it showed how weak the Persian Empire had become. And anyone who would read the Anabasis, which is in seven books, and is actually used as the primer for those people learning beginning Greek, they would learn in the first book essentially how to conquer the Persian Empire. And they always think that Alexander the Great probably had that early on his reading list, and it clung with them very, very much. It showed that the Persian Empire really could not defend itself if the Greeks had sufficient forces and generalship to move in at least wrest the western provinces from the great king. Third, it resulted in a sense of urgency in Sparta at the time of a succession crisis to send a king to command the forces there that could win the war over the Persians. As the 10,000 were marching through Asia and retreating to the Black Sea, Sparta found herself in a succession crisis late in 400 and early in 399 BC. King Agis II died of illness, somewhat unexpectedly. He had a young son, about 12 or 13 years of age, Leonticus, who was known to be the son of Alcibiades and his wife Timaea, born in 412 BC. His only other heir was his half-brother, King Agesilaus. And the Spartan assembly went with Agesilaus. There's a long story about this. Some would argue that it was a set-up job by Lysander. Lysander spoke on behalf of Agesilaus being chosen in preference to Leonticus. There was an oracle apparently circulated in the assembly that Sparta should not elect a lame king. And King Agesilaus had an obvious physical disability, and Lysander said, well, the oracle has to be understood more metaphorically, lame in the sense of not of true blood, kakos, evil, bad, and that would be Leonticus, the son of Alcibiades and Timaea. And the assembly bought the Lysander interpretation. Whether Lysander was the agent of Agesilaus or acting on his own as the protege of, as the mentor of Agesilaus, is an argument that concerns scholars. I think that Agesilaus was in charge of this from the start, and Agesilaus was a hailed king in 399 BC, and as the Eurypontid king, he assembled forces in Asia Minor to battle the Persians. And in 396, he landed with a huge force, 20,000 strong, and proceeded to win stunning victories over the Persians. Lysander, who got a bit too obnoxious for his own good, Agesilaus very quickly put him in his place by demoting Lysander from commander of the cavalry to carver of the royal meat at the dinner table at Ephesus, where he was kept around more or less for the amusement of King Agesilaus and his associates. So much for Lysander as representing the architect or the preview of Spartan decline. The Spartans could very well have won this war, except that Persian diplomacy entered into this, and they encouraged Thebes, Corinth, Argos, and Athens, all for their own reasons, to conspire and attack Sparta in what is known as the Corinthian War. And that war ended in a negotiated settlement in 386 BC that recognized Athenian independence, Spartan control of mainland Greece, and the Persian king took back the Ionian cities. If anyone should be criticized for selling out the Ionians, it really should be the Athenians, Thebans, Corinthians, and Argives, who went in this war out of hatred for Sparta and more than willing to take the peace treaty dictated by the great king of Persia and force the Spartans into giving up the Ionian Greeks. Well, Sparta's position changed dramatically in 371 BC when she was defeated at the Battle of Leuctra by the Thebans. And the Thebans, in many ways, had learned their lessons well from Sparta. But that's hardly an indication that Sparta was necessarily destined to fall due to economic and social decline. And the Thebans themselves did not long hold that position of authority, and the Greek world split up into a series of interstate wars, which only came to an end in 338 BC, when a new force, King Philip of Macedon, decisively intervened and ended Greek independence and interstate war, but at the price of accepting the overlordship of a Macedonian king. Well, what about the other belligerents in the Peloponnesian War? How did they fare in that generation afterwards?